Hi, and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudali Wickham Ashby. And today I'll be chatting with a young lady whom I have quite a lot of respect for, Imelda Bell. I'm sure most of you have heard that name and have actually seen her doing sign language interpretation. Welcome to Visions, Imelda.
Thank you so much, Yudali. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. It is a pleasure indeed. So Imelda, let's start by finding out just a little bit about who really is Imelda Bell.
So I am a person who wears many hats. First of all, I believe that I cannot be where I am without my faith in God. When it comes to interpreting, I will explain why I say that. Because the genesis of it all started through ministry in my church. So I believe strongly that God has ordered my path throughout my life. So that is why I say that. I am a mother, I am a wife, I am a principal, I am an educator. So that's why I say that I wear many hats.
Cool. And I think that is the reality for many of us. We wear many hats. So let's start at the beginning. In terms of how did you get involved in sign language interpretation?
Okay, so many years ago, when I was a young adult in my church, we formed a group because we realized there was this need for reaching out to persons with hearing impairment. And I would have met a dear friend of mine, Lamont Grant, all those years ago, and they would have invited, you know, our hearing impaired friends to church. And I was not familiar with the sign language. He was always very bubbly and friendly, and he would wave hi, and I would wave hi and run away because I didn't know how to say anything else. And I was so, you know, self-conscious and shy. I would just say hi. So that continued for a couple weeks. And eventually there was the opportunity to learn sign language. And you started out with the simple things, you know, the alphabet and numbers and greetings. So then I was able to say, hi, how are you? And I saw him at church. And I would say the rest is history. So through our interactions with the hearing impaired and learning from the materials that we would have gotten, the connections we would have made with people who were working with the hearing impaired, whether it be from persons at the then School for the Deaf and Blind, hanging out and really interacting with members of the hearing impaired community across the island, we were able to hone our skills, and eventually we started to interpret our services. At that time, we would have Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday night. We had Sunday school. We would have started a club where the deaf can come to the church on Saturday afternoons and hang out. So that's why I say I believe that through my faith in God and through my obedience to Him and my involvement in our church ministries, that this is the path that I took. And I would have started doing that even before I became a teacher. So you can understand.
Right. Okay. So then since you became a teacher, tell us now what led you into teaching and your passion for working with special needs. Yes.
Okay. Well, I would have had some experience interpreting and working with the hearing impaired. And back in 1986, I'm aging myself. Back in 1986, I would have had the opportunity to interview for a placement in education. And it happened to be for a person who was working at the School for the Deaf and Blind. And I was able to fill in for that term. And after that, I continued in teaching. So that's how I got started initially. And I would have spent my first assignment as a teacher working at School for the Deaf and Blind.
What would you say have been some of the major changes you've noticed in special needs education?
Over the years, I believe there has become a greater awareness for the needs or the requirements that help our students. And families with children with special needs to interact more with the society. I believe that the general education across the island has improved over the years. Previously, I would say back in the old time days, persons who had children with special needs, they would be seen and not heard. And if they were seen, it was very rarely. But in this new trust in education and across our communities, we are encouraging persons in, you know, a mainstream society to acknowledge, accept, work with, and embrace those persons who have disabilities and see it as an opportunity to work with an individual who happens to have a special needs, as opposed to only seeing the disability. So we say, see the person before you see the disability. And I think that has worked well, and we have been able to see improvements in education. We've seen some improvements in general accessibility across the island. However, there is still a long way to go. There is still much work to be done, and we just have to continue to advocate for and work with organizations who are willing to push our persons who have special educational needs and are able to give them the opportunity to work, the opportunity to develop and be all that they can be. In terms of opportunities, I continue to see that corporate Barbados is willing to lend assistance and give children and young people who have special needs the opportunity to get that work and job experience as we continue to work with them. So in terms of from an educational point of view, we are working with corporate Barbados to partner with them so that they can create and give opportunities to persons with special needs as well as they develop and transition from school into independent living or supported living as they develop and go on.
Okay, so your facilitation of the education of children with special needs is definitely a more holistic approach than just the focus on education, and that's great.
Yes.
What would you say has been one major challenge you have experienced in your teaching career?
I think one of the major challenges, well, it's kind of twofold in terms of one, parent education, and two, stereotypes that often need to be challenged in terms of how persons with disabilities are perceived, because we still do have that stigma and preset and preconceived ideas. So it's almost like a vicious cycle. Persons, parents with children with disabilities, they live in their various communities, and often persons in their communities generally would see them in a certain light. As I said before, we encourage persons to see the person and not just the disability. So there are like preconceived ideas like, oh, this child might not be able to do X and Y because they're using a walker. So sometimes it is difficult for parents in all the caregiving and all the doing and helping, difficult for them to kind of challenge the status quo and advocate for their child and for their rights. And so it is often, you know, that kind of cycle. They react to the perceptions of society, and sometimes that makes them quiet, and then they don't always do the things that they should to advocate or push for the rights of their children. So sometimes it's the education of the parents and the wider society that we are tasked with. So I find that this can be a stumbling block, but we are up for the fight, so to speak. And we are constantly looking for opportunities to educate our parents and to enable them to advocate for their children. And so we are constantly encouraging them to seek the assistance of the various organizations that are out there who are willing to work with them. And opportunities like this, where we can speak to the wider society, is always one that I will, you know, jump at and willing to share, because we need to encourage the wider society to understand that, yes, our children have special needs, or we have adults and young adults who are living with special educational needs, but they are persons, they're people, you know, they have feelings and emotions just like me, just like you. They want to socialize. So they want to go to Bridgetown Market. They want to engage and be, you know, incorporated in every part of our society and not just be seen as, oh, this is the person with disability, so we'll push you to the side. We'll do what we have to do. And then we want to bring persons with disability along at every level of education, of society, in our homes, in our families, in our communities.
Okay, nice. So what are your thoughts about disciplining children with disabilities? Because I know sometimes people are hesitant to do this, thinking that, yeah, they have a disability, you know, just let them act out, whatever, whatever. What are your thoughts?
Okay, my thoughts on discipline, I must say that I am not one who will say, oh, well, you know, that's the way the child is, so we leave them, because we know that behavior, it is always learned. So a child will act in a certain way because they have a need. Okay, so let's take that young child. If I throw myself on the floor, mommy is going to pick me up and give me the toy that I want. So they make a connection and they say, oh, okay, in order to get this toy, I'm going to throw myself on the floor and they're going to pick me up and give me my toy. And if we just leave that, they'll grow older and it won't be a toy next time. It might be, you know, a book. It might be something else, but they will continue to think that this is the way to behave. It would work if they were the only two persons in the world, but we interact and socialize with others. And so we do have to teach them the accepted way to ask, acknowledge when they need help, when there is a need, when they are uncomfortable. So we have to walk alongside them and teach them what is acceptable. So all children, whether they have a disability or not, they operate best when they have boundaries. So they want to know what those boundaries are, because the boundaries create a sense of safety and they are able to adjust and they're able to self-manage and self-regulate within those boundaries. Of course, as they get older, the boundaries change a bit, but boundaries still remain. I think we all live within boundaries. If we didn't, we would have a free-for-all and we wouldn't have any care for the law, or there would be no law. So I'm saying that in growing from stage to stage and developing, we always have to have clear boundaries as to how we can live well with each other. And at this point in time, or over the last couple of years, we have been in education focusing a lot on social and emotional intelligence and bringing that teaching and those soft skills to our children, even our children in special needs, so that they can understand themselves better, understand others, and understand, you know, the wider society, so that they will be able to interact well and work collaboratively and cooperatively with others. So I am definitely one for discipline your children, but we have to learn how. That is why it is so important to meet with persons of like mind. There are associations for various disabilities out there, and we often encourage parents to go into those groups, rather they go to PARDAS, they go to the Autism Association, Down Syndrome Association, wherever, so that they have that camaraderie and they have that support from other parents who are on the journey just like them, so that they understand that they are not alone in this fight, so to speak, and that it often gets better. There are challenges that remain, but the ability to cope usually gets better for the parent and for those in the family, because a disability affects the whole family circle, not just the child and the parent, but everyone who is involved and touches the lives of those persons who have disabilities.
Right. So my next question to you, Imelda, is how do you measure success with our children in special needs? Because, you know, in our society, we tend to measure the educational success of children by the school they may pass to go on to secondary level, or how many certificates they gain, or, you know, the position they may come in class, stuff like that. So how do you measure the educational success?
Educational success in my books has to do with the individual themselves. Often when we have orientation for our new students, I will say to the parents that we often do not compare children with one another. We want the child to be working at their best in whatever area, and we want to move them from one level to a next. So at the school I am at, we have persons of varying levels, various disabilities and various levels of development. And so I don't believe it would be fair to a student to say that this one was not successful because they didn't do a CXC exam, whereas the other one is more successful because they did. So I'll give you an example. I had a student who was nonverbal. They were nonverbal, more or less selectively. So the individual would speak very rarely. And it happened more than once. It happened with a male and it happened with a female as well. They would not speak very often. As they came through the school and got closer to their graduation, so like in the last year and a half, so they would have been going from like fourth to fifth or returning fifth or whatever, they started to speak and they started to express themselves more. And I felt a deep sense of accomplishment because, one, that child was now able to trust us enough with being able to speak in our presence without fear of whatever repercussion they thought might happen. And they were becoming bold enough now to express themselves. So that child was successful, because when they leave, they are now able to speak, to represent themselves, to share their needs. So for that child, that is success. And I see that as a definite jump in their development, and I'm happy that they're able to move on from our school with this ability under their belts, you know, so they're now bold enough and willing enough to speak up and speak out for themselves. So that child was successful. For another child, they were able to do a CXC examination. That child was able to sit under exam conditions with support and complete the various requirements that are needed at CSEC level. For that child, it is success. For another child, they are able to finally write their name and a telephone number from memory independently, automatically. For that child, that is also success. So it comes in various degrees and it depends on the individual. I always say, if you can do A, I want you to be able to do B. If you can already do A and B, I want to take you on to all the other letters of the alphabet. The most important thing is to have the right attitude and be willing to make the effort, be willing to try, be willing to develop yourself. It is up to the individual to dream and to want to do more. I often say to my members of staff and those who I work with, let us encourage our children to dream big. and to see themselves doing more than they are at this point in time. You know, go after them, find out what do you want to do? What you don't know, what do you want to do? Okay, here are some opportunities. There are some opportunities. Let's encourage them to take the opportunities to find out what their passion is and go from there.
Okay, nice. So you moved into an administrator role as the principal of the Ann Hill School.
Yes.
How different is that from your regular role of teaching? And what would you say was a major learning curve for you?
I always say to persons, as I look back, when I was a teacher, I could basically, and I put this in inverted commas, right, end my day, because I don't think a teacher's day ever is ended. We always have to prepare for the next day, you know. I could end my day, leave school behind me and go on as I would have moved through from, you know, teacher to senior teacher and now principal. I realized that education, your school, your responsibilities become more urgent. It's like it's always on the burner. You know, it's harder to disconnect. There are often circumstances beyond our control that pulls our attention, even when we are at home and relaxing. So one of the biggest learning curves for me as an administrator is to learn balance, how to balance my work-life dynamic, how to balance my work-family life dynamic, so personal life, family life, you know, and other responsibilities. It's that balance that has been my biggest learning curve as an administrator.
Okay. I know for many persons outside of the education field, and even those within, sometimes have made the recommendation for a teacher's aide, both in the regular school and those as well as in special needs education. What are your thoughts? Do you think there is a need for teacher's aide, especially in the special needs education sector?
Okay, let me see how to answer that. The need for a teacher's aide by that title is, you know, ideal. However, I know that there are challenges in terms of financial obligations where, you know, our ministry is concerned. However, during COVID and into the last academic year in special ed and in our primary schools, we were given the opportunity to have teacher assistants assigned to our schools. And so I believe that this need, you know, is starting to be met from the ministry's level, where we have assigned to our schools teacher assistants. And the teacher's assistants have been, for the most part, very flexible, very cooperative in helping us to carry out our responsibilities as teachers and for the benefit of our students with special needs and across education. So that is something that there has been some attention given to through the Ministry of Education, I'd say.
Right. So Imelda, we would have had a good chat there about your involvement in special needs education. Tell us quickly, as we get ready to wrap up the program, what has it been like for you in the sign language interpretation arena?
Okay. In terms of sign language, I would have worked, from 1984 or 1985 with my church, Abundant Life Assembly, where we would have provided, along with my other friends in deaf ministry, interpretation services for our hearing impaired visitors and friends who attend the church. We would have done various workshops and opportunities for training over the years. So I would have worked as an interpreter at church. I also had the opportunity for many years to also work with the CBC, where I would have done the interpreting of the evening news. I would have worked also with their children's program years ago, teaching basic sign language to viewers. And I continue to work with my friends in the church community and also for those who are in need of my services, say if they're going to need an interpreter in, you know, whatever forum they would need my services in. So that is basically what I have been doing in terms of interpreting over the years and all the way up until now, really.
Well, Imelda, it really has been a pleasure chatting with you and getting to learn a bit more about special needs education as you perform in your role as principal of the Ann Hill School. And I also want to thank you for the years of service of interpreting so that our community of deaf and hard of hearing can understand and know what is really happening in our country and around the world. So thanks again.
You are most welcome. It has been a pleasure being here. And I really wish you and your organization all the best in the future.
Thanks. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudali Wickham Ashby, and my very special guest, Imelda Bell, principal of the Ann Hill School. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com, and you can check this and past episodes of Vision by going to the VOB929.com website. So until next week, do love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Until then, ciao!